This is Don Hassig with Cancer Action Network's Loving the Earth Pollution-Free Revolution. Joining us today is a special guest. Luann Fattora has been with us before, quite some time ago, in fact, over a year ago, I believe. She talked to us about a discovery that her son and she made in the state of West Virginia on Buckeye Creek. Hey, Luann, how's it going?
Good morning. How are you?
Let's start with 5 minutes of background, because I'm sure some of the listeners have not heard about the problems of the hydraulic fracturing for shale gas in the state of West Virginia, and they certainly have not heard about Buckeye Creek, and they need to know some background.
Okay, well, August 24th, 2009, my son and I discovered on the creek that runs through my family property a couple inches of an orange-red gel that was floating right over our favorite fishing hole. And it had been caught up in some trees and had backed up quite a ways. And I had to call the Department of Environmental Protection with the state of West Virginia the next morning early to come out and figure out what was going on, what that was. It had a very bad odor to it, and the place just looked like a wreck. There was also, you could see in the sides of the banks of the creek, in the sand and dirt, it went up into the soil quite a few inches above the water table, and that pretty much proved that it had sat there a while, too, because it was a secluded spot, and, you know, people rarely go down there. We happened to just be there. And so I got a water specialist out to check the creek water, run some tests. In the meantime, the DEP got the drilling company to come and start cleaning up the area. So it went upstream about 3 miles to a Marcellus gas well that had been drilled. I believe it was a vertical well, and it was drilled right on the, 20, 30 feet from the creek that ran through the upstream property owner's property. So since then, just part of the background, I had to deal with the Department of Environmental Protection quite a bit, with trying to find some answers to what happened. They were quite evasive, and that is kind of understandable that, you know, they can't just jump in and say this and this and this, but I could tell there was just an atmosphere of almost intimidation by questioning them, by questioning the drilling company. I had three hostile encounters during the period with people. One was from the drilling company. It was Hall's Drilling out of Ellenboro, West Virginia, with the water tester, with the water consultant, with Downstream Strategies out of Morgantown, West Virginia. He witnessed, and my nephew witnessed, a hostile encounter with the drilling company who was doing the cleanup. Now, I was told from the Department of Environmental Protection that, quote, an environmental remediation company was doing the cleanup, but then I found out it was the actual drilling company, which in mine doesn't equate an environmental remediation company.
Exactly.
So, go ahead. Do you have a question?
So then the drilling company didn't like it when you questioned the fact that they weren't an environmental remediation company?
They weren't upset with that. They were upset about us watching them and taking some pictures of the cleanup going on upstream from me. There's a recreational trail that goes past my family property along the creek and through the property from where the spill occurred. So you can access, I mean, you could see, you know, freely what was going on. So the water consultant tester was there, and we were going up the trail and we're, you know, observing what was going on. And, you know, we're taking pictures to try to document what was going on. And
right.
You know, we had some words. They didn't like that. So But, you know, we all kind of moved on from that point. And I did invite them to come down to my property. They were at that point about a mile and a half above my property. And the one guy I had a discussion with, I said, come on down to my place. Come look at this. And you could see that he kind of hesitated, you know, and he said, well, I saw it. I'm like, okay, so you know what I'm talking about. So.
Right.
So that's
yeah,
pretty much...
It's
yeah.
too bad. It's too bad that, you know, we're all people, and we should all have relatively similar attitudes about the
mm-hmm.
earth and the water and the, you know, say that stream, for example. It seems like you'd think that the people that you deal with, you know, no matter what they work for, who they work for, that still they'd care about the quality of a stream out there in the forest like that,
mm-hmm.
and care about the wildlife, care about the fish, care about this. It's my understanding that this stream is upstream from a public water supply. I think it was more, can't remember the name of the little village right now,
mm-hmm.
but there was that whole concern that public water supply had been affected by the spill. There's just
That's
so
true.
Many aspects of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that when I said to the man, I personally had words with, I said, you know, I got three boys here who are pretty upset that their special spot has been wrecked, that they're not able to go fishing, they're not able to go swimming. And I said, that's kind of why I'm out here, sir. And he, you could see, you know, when someone kind of looks down, you could see there's kind of a connection where they're like, you know, yeah, you know. But I think the oil and gas industry, especially in West Virginia, seems to kind of lead people by the nose on, oh, well, we're providing you a job, and you need to be grateful to us for that. And by all means, you know, a job is a really good thing to have, especially in the state of West Virginia. It's even, you know, even better when that company provides you health insurance and dental insurance and lets you be part of a profit-sharing plan. But I seriously doubt that happens there in West Virginia with the drilling companies. It would be interesting to find that out. You know, just how well these people are taken care of in that department, but I doubt if they are, you know, given any kind of medical
care. You were telling me that the state of West Virginia, I'm thinking maybe the legislature, and certainly the Department of Environmental Protection, that you had by, you know, basically pounding on the door so much and talking to so many people and just really fighting a good fight in this, that
mm-hmm.
you had seen some action on their part, and whether it's, you know, going to make anything right or improve things, you know, that's left
mm-hmm.
to be determined. But tell us about what, you know, give us a few examples of what it was like moving from those days when this was discovered up until the current time. You know, what was it like dealing with the Department of Environmental Protection, and how have they changed? You know, have they created the impression in your mind that they are, you know, interested and, you know, diligent about doing something that will cause this type of thing to not happen in the future, and they will try to, you know, bring some level of, you know, healthfulness back to Buckeye Creek?
Well, here's what I have found. At first, they were pretty much close ranks along with the oil and gas companies. And I know that the Department of Environmental Protection has so many different divisions. Now, the oil and gas is its own division. Some people say they don't even belong with the Department of Environmental Protection. They really should be a separate regulatory agency and let the environmental protection fall to people outside of the industry so that you have a balanced, you know, approach to this. Red, because when I first was talking to people with the watershed groups and all, I said, aren't you guys the one who are going to be overseeing this? And they said, well, no, we don't typically get involved in oil and gas issues. And I'm like, yes, but this is a watershed issue. And you have, you know, water and waste management. I'm like, well, no, the Department of Oil and Gas takes care of that. And I'm like, well, how do they know how to take care of cleaning stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and they actually, I kind of made a connection with the, you know, some people in that other division, the watershed, and Waste Management, they actually, I believe, approached the oil and gas division and offered, you know, some help, and were, I believe, at that time turned away, that they were taking care of it. I pretty much kept documenting the condition of the creek over time. I was there in October again after the spill was discovered in August, thinking, well, with a little bit of time, we'll see how it looks. So I went back in October, and there was still just a film of oil covering the water, and I documented the pictures. I went upstream, I went downstream. The place was still a mess, and at that time, there were a lot of absorbent booms in the water still. And my sister, who lived there most of the time, said that had alerted me beforehand that they were just taking the booms out of the water and throwing them on the shore and leaving them. And so I took pictures of them. Actually, my sister took pictures of them, and we sent them to the DP, and I said, you know, you guys said that the drilling company was responsible for cleaning this up, but, you know, if we get a rain and this creek rises, it's going to wash these things downstream and get lost. You know, they need to stay on top of this. So, you know, this is another thing. It's like, you know, with, you know, a bunch of drilling people trying to do the cleanup, that they just weren't as invested in the cleanup as they were on, rather than going on and, you know, drilling another well, you know. So so then again in November, my sister sent pictures of the condition of the creek. There were some really weird-looking things in it. There was, like, some fluorescent areas in the water and more pools of red gunk. So at that point, when I sent pictures to the DEP, the head of the DEP, James Martin, they kind of started having me only communicate with their attorney, Jody Jones, with the oil and gas division. And he sent me an email, and he's like, so, well, what makes you think that these issues are related to gas drilling? I felt like, you know, like, duh.
There you go.
I mean,
yeah,
come on.
Started at the very bottom here.
Like, well, well, we never saw these before. Before the spill was discovered. So I had, like I said, I originally had been talking also with the guy with the water and watershed division about water quality and all, and he was very helpful in, you know, educating me on the invertebrate, the macroinvertebrates and things like that in the creek that are very indicative of the health of the stream. So with me kind of pressing him and the DEP, they, you know, said, yeah, we'll send someone up there to take a look at the creek. And so they went in November. This is with the Watershed Assessment Division.
Yep.
And he, you know, he looked around and he said, yeah, you know, you've got some benthic macroinvertebrates here. They didn't notice any crayfish, and neither had I. The last I had seen any crayfish was when they were laying upside down on the bottom of the creek, and I took pictures of that also and kind of sent those out. So they said that there was a noticeable odor of petroleum. They recommended that the booms be taken out to let the water flow more freely. So around that time, actually, it was in October, a little bit backing up there, I had a friend had contacted the Charleston Gazette out of Charleston, West Virginia, which is where the capital is, and there's a reporter there by the name of Ken Ward, and he's pretty big on, you know, coal mining, mountaintop removal, and issues, you know, where the environment has been wrecked and, you know, trying to bring these issues to light. So he had written an article for the Charleston Gazette under the sustained outrage section. It was titled, What Caused the Fracking Fluid Spill in Doddridge County? At that time, a lot of people in the community were coming forward and saying that this was done deliberately by someone associated either with the drilling company or as, you know, part of the surface ownership, that it had been deliberately done. And, of course, I kept asking the DEP what they were finding out with their interviews, and they're like, well, we don't know. And I'm like, you know, have you put these people under oath? And they're like, well, no, we haven't done that. So,
but I
thought perhaps, I pretty much presumed that people in West Union, which is the town downstream from me, knew what had happened. Because, you know, with so many people with the drilling company and all, you would think somebody would say something to the town, oh, you know, that there was a spill in the watershed. Well, and I also thought perhaps after the news article in the Charleston Gazette came out, somebody knew. Now, I don't know any of those people personally anymore. So I just thought, well, you know, they'll find out about it. A little bit later in November, another article from the nearby town of Clarksburg put on the front page, along with pictures of the orange gel on the stream, and that was out of the Clarksburg Exponent Telegram, and that was titled "Answers Few in Fracking Fluid Spill." And
What was the title again?
Answers Few in Fracking Fluid Spill.
I see. Okay.
That was the title, and they had a picture of the creek with the orange red gel all over it. Well, Clarksburg is closer, much closer than Charleston. It's about 20 miles away, and so a lot of people in that area do get the Clarksburg newspaper, and apparently someone with the town council saw that and was very outraged because the person who saw it was the town coordinator for disasters, and he contacted the water operator in the town. Now, this is about 5-6 miles downstream from me, where they intake their drinking water. So the guy was like, yeah, they were experiencing all kinds of odd anomalies in their water during that time. It started in July and was particularly peaking in August. They had extremely high manganese and iron levels. And so they kind of put word out. They wanted to talk to me because, you know, I'm in Colorado by that time, you know, during the school year. And my sister said, yeah, you know, the people from the town want to talk to you. So I gave them a call, and they were just very upset. And I said, look, you know, I asked the inspectors, I asked the head of the DEP, oil and gas division, if maybe they should let you guys know. And they pretty much declined. They didn't seem to think that it went past that my property too much, and I even pointed out to them the fact that we showed that that had sat in that water quite a while, that, right, you know, the water was higher and it receded over time, leaving marks in the soil. I said, that sat there a long time. And so the town of West Union and the water treatment plant operator contacted the DEP. The DEP apparently at first was not cooperative with them. They didn't seem to equate their anomalies in the drinking water testing with the event. So again, the attorney with the DEP Oil and Gas Division wanted the town of West Union to send them all of their records during that period of time. And ultimately, he concluded that well, we really can't say that that was part of that this bill. So I started sending a few articles in to our local newspaper, the West Union Herald, Record Herald, explaining what had happened because, you know, I felt kind of bad I hadn't alerted them at the start, but it all kind of came into play that there wasn't a real sound notification system when there are spills in a watershed. The town and the water operator assumed that they would be notified if there was any kind of spill in their watershed. And it wasn't. What happened was it went to the oil and gas division, and they made the decision not to notify. Apparently, the West Virginia Department of Health is also part of this notification system. And so they had a big go-round with this, where now the Department of Health is to notify whenever there is a spill in a watershed. And this I guess this would not have come about if I had gone ahead and jumped the gun and called the town and let them know. It really showed a gaping hole in the system.
Right.
So
so you have that success. That's hopefully that will protect some other water supply when the next spill takes place. And you were telling me before we started the interview up, when we started arranging this interview, you were telling me about the large number of the hydrofracturing wells that were in the state of West Virginia, and that just kind of blew my mind. I was just so surprised to hear of such a large number of this, such a large amount of activity of this type, and to think that am I correct in understanding that there's a wastewater pool, just a hole dug in the ground with the chemicals that are used in the fracturing dumped in that pool. Is there one of these pools, one of these ponds, these wastewater ponds, at every one of these wells?
Yes. When you're drilling into these shale formations and they need the water, then, they have to have a place to put the water when it comes back up, the water that does come back up. And they're just, if you take, one thing I learned to do over the last year and a few months is to work with Google Earth Maps, and it's a pre-download. And if you go over West Virginia, it's just astonishing. It's heartbreaking to see how many hilltops and areas have been raised, and you can see these sites. You can see some of these impoundments that have been built. Now, last year during the legislature session in February of 10, some of the groups put together some bills to pass, and one of them was to require liner in these pits. At the last minute, this was actually on the floor up for vote, and at the last minute, some of the people went outside, and this is by way of the West Virginia Environmental Council, who attends the legislature during these times. And he saw them go out in the hallway and consult with DEP. And so while this was all kind of happening out in the back room, they come back in, and a clause was inserted into the bill saying that, an engineer could evaluate the site and then recommend that it not be a liner. There not be a liner. Now, this was inserted under people's noses before they voted on it. And they voted on it. And, this just shows you what goes on here in the state of West Virginia with the legislature. It's just so sad. I wrote a letter, a follow-up letter to the governor and James Martin. I said, I've been around the country, many different places, Hawaii, California, many places out west, Florida, and Chicago. And when I tell people I'm from West Virginia, they immediately think pollution and people who are poor and uneducated. And I always spend, West Virginia, because I know there is some wonderful, there's bright, caring people there. But I said, I've about had it with this, me always defending my state to people, outside of the state. And look at what's happening here. Look at what you guys are doing.
Yeah.
You're perpetuating this terrible this terrible, thought of the people of West Virginia as being backward and uneducated. And it's the result of, a lot of these things going on in the legislature where they can't even pass a bill to protect people, without this kind of stuff going on in back rooms.
So all those ponds that were built, you know, and filled with the wastewater prior to this vote, certainly, they're just sitting there with the wastewater just gradually going down into the ground with no liners, and there may not be a whole lot of liners in the future, you know, drilling sites. This, you know,
A lot of them had liners. What was also happening up until recently was the way it was working with the DEP is that when they put that stuff in the lined pit, they could bury it right there then, and that's what was happening. Since June of last year, the Department of Environmental Protection said no more of that, which is a good step. They said don't bury those pits anymore. They've got to be you've got to empty them out and dispose of them either in an underground injection site or or recycle. Now there is a recycling center. It's about 45 minutes away from where my home is in Doddridge County. It's in Fairmont. And what the companies can do is take this stuff up there, and they will recycle it. They will separate stuff out of it, and they can have the water back, too, and reuse it. I believe that's how it works. I'm not sure. I'm not totally up on that right now.
Yeah, it's shocking to think that they would allow them to bury, even if they did have a liner, to bury those ponds, because no liner lasts even close to forever. It's probably leaking pretty quickly after the stuff put in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then to just know that that's covered up, people aren't going to be very likely to discover this. So just here we are, all these spots where there's poison in the ground.
Just think about somebody buying their dream home with a little bit of land, and then not knowing that, knowing that a drilling had taken place, but not knowing that they buried the toxic waste there on their property.
Right.
And this opens up so many different issues. I know a lot of people in West Virginia, their property values have gone down and because of the drilling on their property. I have actually heard that HUD and FHA will not loan someone money to buy a home if there has been drilling like that has occurred, or if the minerals have been separated because of the possible danger to the person, because the property is not as valued as it was beforehand.
Right. So, can you give us an estimate of how many of these wells, the hydraulic fracturing gas wells, have been drilled in the state of West Virginia?
I'm sitting in front of my computer. I can probably look it up. We can keep talking about something else while
okay.
I'm
okay. Yeah, well, another thing, if you can multitask, that'd be really cool, you know. You're going to really amaze me if you do this.
Oh, I am a multitasker.
Okay,
sure.
Okay, there you go. This is good. It's a very impressive multitasker here. The question I have for you then is, what has been discovered about what the actual source of the spill? You know, what was the spill? What happened that caused chemicals from the fracturing to get into Buckeye Creek? You know, what actually happened?
Well, what happened was the by spring of the next of 2010, I went back in April. And as I was coming across the country to go back and look for, see how the creek was looking, I found that when I got there, it was wasn't looking good. There was algae all through the creek, which is very unusual in April. I mean, we're talking April. Algae grows as a result of certain contaminants in the water, temperature in the water. And this is April, coming off of a really hard winter there. And, again, orange pools along the shore. And just as I was getting ready to call the DEP, the attorney contacted me and said that they were about ready to close the case up. And he said that the energy company, Tappo Energy, which was the energy company, and Hall's Drilling was the company that drilled it, somehow they're related, they were fined $10,000. Now, I mean, you know, $10,000, that's really not much in my book. They were fined $10,000 for the spill, but they still couldn't say what happened. Again, and I reiterated that, you know, perhaps they should have put people under oath, you know, because it was alleged in the community that it was done deliberately. And but they didn't do that. They were just kind of wanting to move on. And I said, I've got some pictures to show you right now of my property. So I sent it to him, and again, he's kind of like, well, we don't think that associated with on gas drilling, that's just algae. And I said, I've never seen algae like this in this creek. And I did a little research, and I found that algae particularly likes manganese and iron, and there's actually specific algae that grow with iron enriched within iron enriched water. As a matter of fact, yep. It can be quite a problem once it gets into a watershed or even a water well sometimes that'll happen. What we decided to do is get the biologists again from the DEP with the watershed assessment. When they were there the prior November, they were not able to do a real thorough check. What they did more was look at the condition of the creek, check for the macroinvertebrates. This time, they were going to go in with a shocker, shock the water, and see what comes up, if there was fish in there. I had been saying that we had not seen any fish rising, and that was very unusual. You know, we had like 2-3 foot muskie there. We had bass so big that my kids had a hard time reeling them up out of the water. Now, I've got pictures showing my kids playing in that water. It looks, I mean, clean. There's, you know, the sand is clean. It's white looking. They're standing there holding fish that are, you know, like, you know, a foot and a half long.
Well,
and I said, that's no more.
Yeah.
And so the biologist came up, and I tried to meet with them, but what happens in the spring is when you get a rain, you know, the water rises too much, or it gets too murky, and they wouldn't be able to see. So they needed to wait a while to make sure the water was clear to be able to see better. So they actually were there, I believe it was the end of May or early June, where they went up and walked the creek. And on my property, I kind of diagrammed where to look for fish, and they looked, and they concluded that the creek was not impaired, but it's pretty borderline. It was suboptimal is what they wrote in their report, suboptimal conditions. And they did not find any of the big fish that we were used to. They found some sunfish, which, you know, that's good that those were there, but the bigger fish had been either, like, they had moved into other areas where it was less hostile environment for them to live. So at that point, per the report from the watershed assessment guys, then the DEP Oil and Gas Division decided to conclude the whole case. And what they did was they posted everything on the internet right on their site. Probably, you know, as public information, but it also pretty much absolved themselves. Now, one thing I found was, I lost my train of thought.
We were talking about what actually caused the spill, you know, what actually happened, what took place. That,
they don't know.
they never figured it out. They never figured it out. Well,
no, they didn't. They didn't. But a lot of people do know. Okay, here's my thing that I got up on the internet. This is on the West Virginia DEP oil and gas site. Now, this is just permits issued. I'm not sure how many total. 1 through 100. There's 1,669 rows. Is that times 100?
Well,
and this is the Marcellus Formation. This is the way it works in West Virginia. You can go onto the internet to the oil and gas site through the DEP, and you can look up different formations, and you can, see how many permits are issued in the different formations. So if you go in and you do, Marcellus, then it'll bring you up all the permits that were issued out of that particular formation. You can even go into other formations. So,
is there any information on how much drilling has actually occurred, or is it just permits?
It's just permits.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's too bad they don't provide the information about how much drilling has occurred, because that's just so much more serious and so much more, important to the individual public West Virginia resident knowledge to know. Say, like, if I was living down there in Dodgers County, for example, to know how many of those wells had actually been drilled and that there were these ponds sitting around in all those places, it would just give you so much better sense of how likely it was that there'd be real, major public health kind of harm taking place. As, say if there was just like one well, and then that wouldn't be any big deal. But then there's this well that you were dealing with that had a spill, and that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's 100 of those, that are sitting out there, and then, a certain percentage of them are going to have this happen eventually, or if there's 1,000 of them, and it's already happened to a lot of them, there's a lot that, the public could benefit from knowing if they really knew more about. I wonder if there is anybody out there that's gone around and just made a record of where these wells actually have been drilled, the actual drilled well, where it is, when it was done, I guess, and then counted them, just to have an idea of just what kind of impact there is.
I've gotten to know this guy. His name is Lou Baker, and he is with the West Virginia Rural Water Association, and he works with water treatment plants, and he also had been alerted by the town of West Union as to what was going on after the spill had occurred. And we had some communication, and he's been a really good resource. Now, last summer, there were a couple meetings in Charleston with the Department of Environmental Protection about upcoming rule changes. And this is open to the public for comments. And I went to a couple of these meetings at the DEP. The one I went to was pretty well attended. This was regarding upcoming, recommended rule changes that the DEP wanted to make to oil and gas drilling. The room was packed with a lot of the industry people, but also a lot of people from different watersheds came, and they had presentations to make. Lou Baker was also one of them, keeping track of what was going on. But I also met up with people with the Department of Natural Resources. And the Department of Natural Resources did a presentation, which was excellent, and it really opened my eyes about how water that has been disturbed with sedimentation, which is happening a lot there. The fish, he showed an example of fish that are the same age. One fish was 2 years old. Both fish were 2 years old. One fish lived in water that was disturbed and muddied a lot, and it was half the size of a fish that lived in an area that was natural and clean and did not have disturbances in it. So it kind of opened my eyes what happened to my creek in that. The water is so disturbed now that some fish can live, but they're not going to thrive and grow to their full potential.
Why is there so much mud in the creek?
Oh, okay. Well, I also saw, people have kind of gotten complacent with the site of the creeks being muddy. Now, and, it's normal to some degree, but it's not normal after one rain. When I was there, it was last summer, we had a hard rain in the night. It was brief. So I go down and look at the creek, and it's it looks like coffee with milk in it. So I go upstream, and I find that on the same property where the spill occurred, there was another Marcellus gas well that had been drilled, not too far upstream from that. You know, it was like a, I don't know, it was just kind of up around the bend there. And the site, the drilling had occurred, all the equipment was in. The site above it had been kind of raised, and also, like, again, this was near the creek. I took pictures and showed all these gullies that had been washed. It probably washed a ton of soil into that creek, which smothers your macroinvertebrates. It looked terrible. There was just standing mud all over the place. And so these guys had not bothered to reclaim it. And they've got a period of time where they're supposed to do it, but it's not quick enough. It's not quick enough. They need to immediately reseed the areas, plant plants back into the area so that when it rains, it doesn't wash off into these creeks. And I found another site in a nearby county, Harrison County, where it was horrendous looking. And when I sent the pictures to the DEP, I'm like, come on, you know, what's going on here? So they found, they sent inspectors out and apparently, you know, got on them to get it reseeded. Now, another issue that kind of has come up, I knew this one site existed near where I have family living in the nearby county. It's a creek called Ten Mile Creek and Indian Creek. And this site had been under the process of being prepared for another Marcellus gas well drilling. And what I have found is that I think a lot of these operations are going forward and raising these sites without a permit in place, because I couldn't find any information about it on the internet. But in going into the oil and gas records, now that I've got access to, I see that a permit wasn't even issued until October. And yet, this was back in the summer when all this erosion was taking place and spilling down into the stream, making it run muddy all the time. I saw that these places, they just assume they're going to go ahead and get a permit for this, so they start work on it before they get a permit. And I think this is another part.
Let's just stop for right just a minute here and just clarify a little bit. So when a company is in the process of getting a permit, or even if, you know, once they get a permit, or, you know, whatever the status of the permit is, but what do they do, you know, to set about drilling the well? You know, what takes place out in the forest or in this woods or in this farm field, or, you know, what happens to the dirt, you know, the earth, you know, the land there, you know?
They just move it around. I mean, this place laid exposed. People in the area were complaining about when the wind would kick up, it was blowing dirt. When it would rain, it was washing dirt into the creek. And they don't care. They
so
really don't
area?
Care about that.
About how big an area, you know, for a well, you know, a gas well?
A football field. I'd say maybe a football field size,
wow.
Maybe more. But what they also do is, for some reason, and I don't know why, I guess I need to ask more questions, they seem to be scalping the area above it on the side of the hill. And they remove trees, which, you know, trees also help with erosion.
Right.
And what happens when you get a big rain is they help absorb a lot of the water before it even gets into a creek. Now, more people are reporting flash flooding in those areas there because of this. And somebody actually documented this on a YouTube video showing that, boom, this little creek that ran by their house, it was like, bam, and they're like, thanks, oil and gas guys, you know, because they go remove all these massive amount of trees, they disturb the soil, it rains, the trees are gone that would soak that up. So now it all runs down into these streams, and there's been a lot of reporting of flash floods in that area where that never happened before at all,
so
because it was so heavily forested.
So they cut the trees, And then do they level the site? You know, just, you know, push the dirt around till it's level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. A lot of these are happening. I see it happening a lot on hilltops, and I see it happening a lot in the valleys along the creeks. I know on the hilltops, it kind of makes it nice for them because nobody can see it, except now you can see it on via Google Earth Maps. And when I was, I was there last October, and I was flying across the state of West Virginia on my way out. And I looked down, and I counted 7 fires coming up out of the forest, and just all within eyesight. And there was a guy sitting next to me from actually Denver who works on pipelines. And we were talking about the Marcellus gas well drilling and the stuff going on in western Colorado. And he looked down and he's like, is that what you're talking about? And you could see that the hilltop had been all scalped and leveled and the trees were gone. And I said, yes. And he's like, well, what's all that smoke coming up out of the forest? And we counted 7 places. And I realized we were pretty much over my home county, Doddridge County. And what they do is they burn the stuff. They scalp the trees out, you know, maybe they might sell off some of the logs and all, but, you know, it creates a lot of brush, so they burn it. So, I mean, it kind of reminded me of, you know, Brazil, where, right. You know, they're taking the rainforest out, you know, so, yeah. And then, so it kind of has come to my attention, like I said, I think a lot of these places are proceeding before they're even getting their permits. Now, there are 12 active inspectors in the state of West Virginia. And you've got thousands and thousands of operating wells. You've got thousands and thousands of new wells going in. And that's part of what's going on with the legislature now. The DEP itself, I think because of this big meeting in Charleston we had last summer, because there were some people getting upset, and James Martin's there, the deputy of the DEP was overall was there, and there were some people saying, you know, we need help here, and the DEP was saying, well, you know, why don't you call us, and the guys were like, we do call you, and nothing is happening.
Nothing happens.
No, you know, so. So up before the legislature now is a bill that is going to require a fee from every Marcellus gas well driller per well, $15,000. Right now it's $600. Okay. So if they can get this passed where $15,000, now they acknowledge that their typical profit off of one well is in the millions of dollars. Okay, so $15,000 really shouldn't make that big a deal to them.
Right.
But if they can pass this, it will fund many, many, many more inspectors. Now, can you imagine 12 people for an entire state to go around and inspect these? They can't inspect, and they acknowledge that a lot of these wells have been drilled without an inspector looking at it. They can't do it. They just can't do it. And there's been no money coming in to fund more positions. So we're very hopeful, but the industry, of course, is saying, we don't need that. We don't need all these people inspecting us. And you know, it's like, well, so it's like
they're
against the creation. Just think how many jobs this is going to create. Now, all these people in the oil and gas industry keep saying, oh, look at all the jobs we're creating. Well, here's the opportunity to create even more jobs. This will fund these vital new jobs. And how can they deny that these jobs are necessary in this economy? But yet they're saying, oh, no, well, we don't need those kind of jobs created.
Not the kind of jobs that would cause them to be careful about what they're doing and have to spend a little more money to get the job done right. And I'm very hopeful that you'll get your inspectors. That'd be an improvement for sure.
It would be, then on the flip side, a lot of the inspectors have to be, when they are hired, they have to have been associated already with the oil and gas industry. They have to have worked in the industry at some point, you know, in their career. So
It's hard to win at this game.
It is, but at least you would have somebody who could respond, you know, quickly. So,
well, it sounds to me like so is it your impression? You know, it's your knowledge that the shale gas is a growing. You know, there's more and more. They're drilling more and more wells. You know, that this is a building environmental problem. You know, a growing environmental problem for the state of West Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And it's what's really a surprise is that, you know, originally they were going around saying it was kind of implying that it was your patriotic duty to allow them on to lease your gas minerals and oil and gas minerals and all that. And EQT, which is a big company in Doddridge County, they run this ad in the local newspaper. It's a half-page ad with these kids, like, with their hand over their heart, like they're doing the Pledge of Allegiance. And they're making it sound like it's a patriotic duty to do this. But what I have found, and this is a fact, that these big gas companies, Chesapeake, EQT, others, what they're doing is they're setting things up so that they can export this gas to China and other countries. I found this, you know, in news articles, and they're building a plant in Texas, and they want to build another plant in New Jersey for separation of the gas and fluids and all so that it can be shipped overseas to South China. And this is in the works in Texas. Right now the one in New Jersey is on hold. And I suspect it's on hold because they don't know what's going to happen with the New York moratorium, that they may not get as much gas as they want to be able to export it. So this really isn't about our patriotic duty to energy independence at all. It's about the companies making, you know, millions in profits by selling it outside of our country, instead of preserving it for us, for our own energy independence. They're going to start selling it to China. Now, that has to go through an approval process, for sure. But they're already starting on a plant in Texas, like I said. So, it's like these poor people who have been, you know, had their arms twisted to sign the lease, making it sound like they were doing something good. You know, it really is. It's all about money and profits from the oil and gas company.
Yeah, and I'm sure they know how this is going to turn out. So the fact they're building that plant in Texas is just an indicator that they know that with all the power they have in the federal government, they'll get to do whatever they choose to do.
Mm-hmm.
They have this far. You know, they're not stupid. They know how it's gone all along. They know what kind of power they have with these lawmakers and these regulatory people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm hoping that we can, you know, hear of some improvements in the situation in the state of West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like one of the small improvements, and it's certainly something that's in the works, is getting these inspectors. So keep us posted about that. Keep us posted on how it turns out with this bill before the legislature of the state of West Virginia to get more inspectors.
I've got one more thing that has happened. When I was there last October, I had put a little news article in the newspaper because we were undergoing some terribly, terrible drought conditions in the entire state. And the governor actually declared the eastern part of the state as a disaster because there's so many crops and all that dependent on rain, and they weren't getting it. And but I put a little news article in the local paper, and I said, you know, would anybody be interested in forming a watershed association? And I thought, you know, maybe nobody really cares. And I put my phone number and all an email address in, and I started getting phone calls. So now I went back, and a couple weeks later, once people started calling me and saying, yes, you know, they were very concerned about what was going on, and I went back to West Virginia, and I had everybody come to my house in Doddridge County, and we talked about, you know, what our interests were, what we were kind of hoping to see. And so now we have a watershed association started, and it's kind of undergoing you know, they've come up with a mission statement, and I said, you know, you guys, you are the ones who are going to run the show here. I can't do this because I don't live here, but I do care enough about being of whatever support I can be. I'll help link you up with people, you know, and I also at the time had the Watershed guys, the guy who he's in charge of Watershed associations, and they help these associations get linked up with grant money, how to do water testing on their own, cleanup days, and I also had the local environmental advocate with the DEP come to the meeting. He is, you know, the environmental advocate. There had been one person with the DEP, and she was overwhelmed last few years, so they hired two more people, and one was in nearby Fairmont. He came to the meeting, and it was just, it was great, you know, that we had people, and I said, I'm so grateful that they came, because I just, you know, you worry that you're the only person who really cares, and, you know, there's definitely, you know, strength in numbers, and one of the guys who had called me, he was concerned about water continuing to be taken out of the streams. Now, the DEP came up with a water guidance tool. It's not etched in stone that they have to abide by it, the drillers, by taking water, but they want them to. And what they did was, on the internet, they could check. You can actually check and see what the DEP recommendation is for water levels, whether they can take water out of streams or not, because, like I said, it was just terrible drought conditions. And there was, in our section of the state, no water was to be taken out of local streams, but yet the drillers continued to do it. So the one guy who called me, you know, he sent me pictures. I immediately turned it over to the DEP, and I said, look, we're working on getting a watershed association together, and here's what's going on now. And I noticed a little bit of a change where they more immediately responded to me then, because of the fact that we're actually getting the Watershed Association together now.
Yeah,
rather than me just yelling into the dark, you know, now I've got more people. So,
that'll make a big difference, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Numbers.
Mm-hmm. And actually, a couple of the people, the members, West Virginia, on Wednesday this next week, a lot of the environmental groups are having an Earth Day at the Capitol, and they want everybody possible to come. I would love to be there. I just can't do it. But I know some people from the Watershed Association are going to go, and they're going to go take people around to meet with legislators, discuss issues with the legislators, and so I feel really good that, you know, my county is going to be represented down there, because last year at the legislature, the Sierra Club used a lot of my information and pictures as a presentation to the legislators as to why the changes need to start happening. So I feel pretty gratified that, you know, we've got some people now who are going to be there.
Yeah, you're certainly making progress. It sounds great, you know. I'm sure that it'll be part of what makes us better than it would have been otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, so good to hear of how this is going.
Well, there's a quote from the Lorax. You know who the Lorax is, right?
Yep.
Okay. It says, "Unless someone like you cares a whole awful lot, nothing's going to get better. It's not."
Exactly.
I kind of use that a lot when I send out my, you know, information to people, because it takes people caring an awful lot to get some changes made. Now, I'm trying to be optimistic with the legislature, but you've got the bee's nest is really buzzing, you know, on the other side. See, you know, they don't want to give up a penny of their profits to protect the environment. So, but we'll see what happens. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm gonna stay in touch just to I want to hear how this continues to go, because it's the fact that you have worked on this long and that things are building, And there's this threat, you know, that continues to exist with the more wells. And there's, you know, there's quite an interesting situation developing and in place down there in West Virginia. And I care about West Virginia. That's where my family's, my dad's side of the family actually, are, you know, came from.
Yeah.
New Martinsburg, West Virginia.
Oh, so yeah.
I will.
And that area, that county, that's being really raised over big time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I'll have to go back down there myself and see what things are like. I haven't been down in old West Virginia in, like, years.
Well, yeah, if I'm there this summer and you want to come down, I'll take you around and show you.
That's the plan. That's the plan. Okay. I'll take you up on that.
Yeah.
Well, it's been nice talking with you, Luann.
Okay.
And good luck in all your endeavors.
Well, thank you. Thanks for all of your support.
Yep.
Okay.
Nice talking to you, and we're going to we'll wrap it up now.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Luann. Yep, bye. This is Don Hussig with Loving the Earth, Pollution-Free Revolution. We were just talking with Luann Fatora. She has a watershed council going in her part of West Virginia, Doddridge County, and it all came because she cared about the Buckeye Creek that flowed through her, you know, her home properties there in West Virginia. People need to care. They need to take action on their caring feelings. And we can be a balance to the profit motives of the corporations. We don't have to settle for business as usual. People that care will make a difference, and we will have the best result for the public health and the environment and keep the corporations under control. This has been Don Hussig with Loving the Earth, Pollution-Free Revolution. Good day.